Well, some fun and some laughs on Sunday as the match was contested, with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning adding to a little bit of the enjoyment of Tiger and Phil alone. And Brady, of course, hauling out that shot after Charles Barkley was up in his grill. Manning with the good birdie putt that got he and Woods a couple up. They went up three up at one point, but then after a comeback from both Brady and Mickelson, it was Tiger lagging it the perfect lag putt, needing two putts to win for their side, and more importantly, $20 million raised for COVID-19 relief. The big part of the story from the match, too, as we continue between golf and NASCAR to get more live sports back in the hopper. Hi, everyone. Mike Tirico with you. Glad you are with us. Hope you enjoyed at a safe distance a holiday weekend. Again, we continue to work this balance, and I discussed it at this time on Friday. We're looking at the numbers of the death toll. If you put on MSNBC or CNN or Fox News, you see that we're closing in on, incredibly and sadly, 100,000 people losing their lives from COVID-19. Yet we're all having fun over here talking about sports coming back. It's a balance that there is no perfect feel for, but we're just trying to do our best here. So we'll talk sports in this hour. If you miss any of it, the podcast is available for you to take that, and the YouTube channel, NBC Sports. You can find all of our interviews. Some busy news events happening. The National Hockey League and the Players Association continue to have conversations about, will they or won't they get back to return to play? 2014 format seems to have been approved. We await to hear the latest in hours or days here from the NHL on the plan to return. Major League Baseball, they're talking economics apparently at this point, with still the testing protocols to go through. But the economic issue is big if baseball wants to get on the field in a month. And the NBA, with the most significant conversation, they're looking at Disney World and Orlando as a single site return, the league admitting to that over the weekend. Now the conversations if there will be a late July return and do it all on one site. And there are so many questions regarding that. Mark Cuban is one of the people who certainly will be able to answer some of those questions, and the owner of the Dallas Mavericks for the last 20 years joins us now. Mark, been a long time. How you been?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just noticing how bad my haircut is. I need a haircut.
Well, do you have anybody in the house who can do it?
I have a 16-year-old daughter, a 13-year-old daughter, a 10-year-old son, and my wife, and I wouldn't let any of them do it. They're so sick of me after all this quarantine. I don't trust them.
Well done. Well done. All right. Well, so what's your feeling on this Orlando July thing that Mike Bass, the league spokesman, admitted Saturday the league is approaching? What's your read and your feel on this, Mark?
I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think there's a good shot that it can happen, presuming that we're able to get tests. The tests are, you know, accurate enough to meet the safety standards that the league and the Players Association set. And, you know, we go from there. I think we're seeing some successes in other sports and other events. And I think, you know, we're on that path.
The testing, how important is it that if we're going to use testing for pro sports, that we have it for the communities as well?
Well, it's everything, right? The last position we want to be in is taking a test from somebody who needs it. And so I think that has to come first, along with accuracy, because, you know, we've got to be good corporate citizens in every community that we're in. And I think, you know, that's of paramount importance to us. And I know Adam's been very clear about that.
Adam Silver, the commissioner. Do you want to jump right to a postseason, or you want to finish some regular season first?
Yeah, let's talk about it. I want to change things around. You know me, I'm a mover and shaker. I want to experiment. And so I think, you know, what I proposed was that, and we extend the playoff format to 10 teams from each conference and play at least five games prior to going into playoffs. And if we do that, every team in the Eastern Conference would have a chance, at least, of making the playoffs, and all but two in the Western Conference would do it. Then what I would do is, then once we got 10 and 10, I would reseed them, and then 17 would play 20 and 18 would play 19 in a one-game series. Mm-hmm. The winner then would take on the eighth place seed in a best of five, while the number one team from each conference would get a bye. Then you go forward normally from there. That gives us a chance to have some more playoff games, some more excitement, some more meaningful games. That gives almost every team a chance when we come back for whatever's going to be left of our regular season to do something interesting and compete for something. So I think we've got to change it up some. We can't just go the old tried and true way.
I feel like this is Shark Tank reverse. So let me ask you something. Do you want to keep doing this going forward? Do you want to change the system a little bit permanently, or you just want to make this a test case to see if it can work?
Like a Shark Tank, we'll test it out first. We'll see how the market responds. You know, I like it, and I can see it going forward, particularly, you know, if we shorten the season a little bit. But, and I'm not talking from 82 to 42. I mean, like 82 to 78, something like that. But, you know, it's certainly worth something considering.
And do you want to start the season still around Christmas? Is that a better window, do you think, for the NBA regular season to go?
Yeah, I mean, you know TV as well as anybody, Mike. You know, historically, you know, over the summer, you have fewer households using television, but the game has changed dramatically. And so starting Christmas Day now, I think, really allows us to take more of the focus as the NFL starts to wind down their season. And it allows us to go into the summer post-NFL and post-NHL, for that matter, and really have that period of time to ourselves.
Mark, let's talk about what you did with your arena workers, the American Airlines Arena, and the folks in the Mavericks front office and organization. You came out right away and said, we're going to keep them on the payroll. What message do you feel that you were able to send, not just to your peers, but to your employees about what leadership looks like in this crucial time?
I mean, it just happened to be something I was thinking about, and we just happened to be the last game, and I just happened to be the last interview. But, you know, I was concerned that with everything shutting down so quickly, that our employees, particularly the ones that work by the hour, get paid by the hour, would feel all this uncertainty and be afraid. And so I really wanted to alleviate some of those fears. You know, it was just as simple as that.
Your facility, the practice facility, hasn't opened yet. We started to see NBA practice facilities start to open. Where are you on that, and what's the forecast for getting players back in there?
You know, we're not in any rush. We'll just let the science guide us. We think we're getting closer. I just want to have complete confidence and make sure our guys have complete confidence. So we're going through all the steps to get it open. We're just not 100% of the way there. We just want, you know, there's just still, you know, we're an early open state. And in an early open state like this, you know, a lot of people are really trying to prove a point that, hey, we're open. Let's take advantage of that. We just want to make sure that, you know, we're seeing a decline in cases. You know, the phase one, phase two, phase three type things, that's important to us. And so we're really trying to stick to the rules and make sure that we follow them.
The fans have been so important to you. You have stayed right there with your fans physically in the building for all these years. What do you see the fan experience like as we start to think about what that new normal is going to be?
That's a great question. Again, it comes down to, you know, when the season starts and, you know, where we are in terms of a vaccine and other therapies and confidence. Because by the time we get to next season, December 25th, let's just say it starts there, we'll have had a lot more experience. You know, the one certainty, Mike, is that we learn something new about this disease. We learn something new about the vaccine and the therapy seemingly every single day. And so it's really hard to predict. You know, everybody's suggesting that, you know, we'll have all the social distancing. And, you know, my guess is we'll be more concerned, you know, right now on how do we keep the arena clean? How do we make it so that we have less touch points? You know, do we use ambient voice to deal with, you know, giving commands to elevators or whatever? How do we keep handrails clean? Do we have wraps that people carry around with them? There's all these things that we're going through there. If we can come up with a scenario where we give everybody confidence that the touch points are going to be so few and far between that they don't have to worry about going to an arena where there's a lot of people. And then, you know, in parallel to that, we have more confidence with the vaccine, then we may be able to have more people than we currently expect. If we don't have the results from a vaccine, then we'll have to introduce all the expected social distancing. And my guess is we're working on software that allows families to group together. So if the Tirico household that's quarantined together wants to come together and there's five of you, let's say, there's no reason why you can't sit together. If the Cuban and Tirico households happen to be neighbors and we trust each other and, you know, we're willing to get tested together, there's no reason why all 10 of us can't sit together. And so we're looking at those types of solutions to get us going forward.
Mark, there's a lot of cost to all of this new reality in the business world. And I wanted to put the Shark Tank hat back on, if you will, here. What advice would you give to the business owners, the entrepreneurs who have that great mind that's always working, but know that the cost of startup now is going to be massive given the changes that are going to be built into this new economy?
Well, I'd correct you there, Mike. Actually, we're seeing the acceleration of trends towards purely digital, right? So we went from an agrarian economy to an industrial economy to a hybrid digital touch economy. Now we're getting a lot more no-touch, full digital. And those are actually less expensive to start. So this is a unique opportunity for any and all entrepreneurs that can come up with something that can be delivered digitally or it can be delivered physically, but using a digital interface with no touch. The challenge is for those businesses who are already in business. You're a restaurant, you're a retail store. How do you deal with all those upgrades? Like, again, going back to the American Airlines Center, we're looking at having to do what we did in our locker room. When we redid our locker room a couple of years ago, we went to Vegas and talked to the casinos about how they filter air, all the particulations and all the particles and what the percentages can be and should be. And we're looking at extending that to the entire arena because you don't want to recirculate if somebody comes in who's sick. And so these are all the issues that small businesses need to address. And actually, I partner with a group, the AIHA, which is the American Industrial Hygiene Association. And we did a website, Back to Work Safely, that deals with a lot of these issues. Because for small and medium-sized businesses in particular, it's hard to know exactly what you need to do. And so we really wanted to try to push out there because we want to see people get back to work, but it's got to be done safely.
Well, it's fascinating. I absolutely appreciate being corrected there. And I think we were talking about the same type of thing because I'm thinking more of the economies that are trying to get back to the way they used to service the customer. I've heard you speak on Shark Tank about the experiential relationships and how important that can be. Maybe we have to just move our minds forward a generation to the digital generation, and there may be different experiential. Our digital experiences right now, like this interview, we've changed a lot of how we approach the world. This is probably the way it's going to be, and if we get there faster, as you said, maybe there'll be less cost involved and more effective ways to do business, to communicate, and to do commerce as well.
Yeah, there's no question. There's some 16 or even a 61-year-old out there who's got a better vision or a unique way of doing business. And, you know, their back's probably against the wall. They're on their last dollar. And they're like, I might as well just go for it. Because, Mike, I have no doubt in my mind that today, right now, as we speak, is an incredible time to start a business. And when we look back in 10, 15 years, we're going to come to realize that 5, 10, 20, 25, who knows how many world-class, you know, world-changing companies were created specifically because of the pandemic and specifically for the reasons you mentioned. We have to come up, or we can come up with new and better ways to do things.
I love getting stuck on CNBC on a random night with Shark Tank, and I just get sucked into all the old shows. It's so much fun. Do you find that more people want to talk Shark Tank or Mavericks with you when they run into you wherever you might be?
It's not even close anymore. It's not even close, Mike. Everywhere, if someone's pitching me an idea, people run me down on the streets, you know, or used to anyways. That would be scary. But, you know, hey, my son or daughter do this, this, and this. And that's why I do the show. I mean, we're still one of the top shows watched by families together Friday nights on ABC.
Yeah.
And, you know, it sends a message that even through all this, the American dream is alive and well. And again, we're going through this business reset, this economic reset, and that makes it the best time ever. Ever to create a new company.
What's it been like to be home other than the lack of a haircut? I saw some of the dancing that you were trying to figure out. Have you gotten better at the household chores? I know you mentioned that as well.
No, watch these moves, right? There we go. Come on, here we go. Now here comes the Kodak Black. Here comes the Kodak. There's the move right there.
There it is. I can't wait till your players crush you on that.
Oh, no, they're jealous. They're jealous, Mike. They're jealous. No, it's been interesting, all families. The first 2 weeks, my wife and I were in charge. By day 15, the inmates overtook the asylum. So now my kids, I mean, it's hard enough with a 16 and 13-year-old daughter in normal times. It's they're great. It's been great family time. And to answer your question, chores, yes. I mean, washing my own clothes, doing the dishes, sweeping the floors. Nice. And obviously, I'm the garbage man, you know. And so it's great. Actually, you know, that's one of the real positives. Our kids actually have to take some responsibility, and so it's been good.
I agree. It's been the blessing in all of the darkness of all this, I think, for so many of us, especially those of us who travel and have been involved in business. All right, mm-hmm. Let's just get back to the headline here and the return to play for the league here. What's your biggest concern, Mark, about your players being in one place and trying to get a season started and, cross our fingers, hopefully finished?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more concerned when they're not in one place, honestly, you know, because the touch points will be far greater when they're trying to figure out, do I stay in, do I go out, what's open, what's not. You know, there's so much uncertainty. We really don't have anybody that we all trust in terms of information. And so I actually feel better about our Hotel California approach, where you check in, but you can't leave unless you're eliminated, right. You know, and right. So, you know, I actually have more confidence in that. But obviously, there's going to be a transition period, starting with, you know, when we get to full practices, how guys interact physically, you know, in terms of in-game, how they react coming off the court, you know, how we're going to invent new, you know, whatever, you know, to just connect, to have players connect or after something fun happens. It'll be different. But like anything else, you know, we're talking, you know, 20 somethings, they're going to be resilient. They're going to take advantage of, they're going to have fun, because, you know, we will have some level of normalcy, and I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Hey, great to catch up. It's been way too long.
Absolutely.
Great to hear your ideas and the way you make all of us think. And we look forward to the Christmas Day start of the league, the new playoffs that you've permitted out there and put out there, and also the continued growth of your dance moves, Mark. I think you're going to be a TikTok legend.
You know, I got Renegade. You know, that's...
Get out. Get him off the screen. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
See you, Mike.
Mark Cuban there. When we come back, the commissioner of the ACC, John Swofford, will ask him if we're all coming back together or there may be bifurcation in football. Ron Rivera is scheduled later as well. We continue on Lunch Talk Live on a Tuesday. Got to see Michael Jordan, some other basketball stars. In their Saturday Night Live days, we'll go to the quarterbacks, Brady and Manning, who were sensational in the challenge with Peyton and Tiger a couple days ago. Eli Manning, J.J. Watt. It's the best of SNL in primetime on NBCSN tonight. Chance to relive the quarterbacks, center stage in Studio 8H. We are joined now by the commissioner of the ACC, John Swofford. Obviously, so much is going on in college athletics. John, you've been at this since the late 90s as the commissioner. Have you ever gone through a time like this?
No, never, Mike. We've had some challenges along the way, but nothing like this that's comparable to this. This is a new world, and there's no textbook for it, so we're all jumping in together and doing the best we can with it.
So given that there's no textbook, there's no history to lean on, what has been the best way that you've been able to collect information here, knowing that the unknown is still a couple of months out there from having to make that decision on not just football, but all the fall sports on the campuses?
Mike, I think the key for us has been to establish communication on a regular basis with all the good people affected by this and intercollegiate athletics. And that includes our presidents, our athletic directors, of course, our coaches, our SWAs, from an internal standpoint, and then externally, certainly I'm on a call every day with my commissioner colleagues in the A5. And the five of us, just got off that call, actually, but we talk every day so that we're sharing information and best practices. And we've established a medical advisory committee within the ACC, as I know that my colleague conferences have done the same, to benefit from science and from the tremendous medical personalities that we have across the board in our various conferences. And we're blessed in the ACC to have some of the best medical schools in the country. And that certainly is coming in handy as well. But I think that that regular and almost constant communication among our various constituencies at the conference level has been critical to our ability to move forward and to keep everybody pretty much on the same page, although there are some institutional differences, and that's to be expected. But it's one of the great things about being a part of a conference. You can learn so much from each other.
And that's been something that maybe folks don't realize. There's been a lot of information shared, not just sports-wise in terms of athletics, but also academics and trying to set up some protocols for getting students back on campuses. And the conferences are working together in many regards to share that information. You mentioned the five and the conversations. That's you, the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, and the Big 12. So those commissioners really, right. You're one of the five, have a lot of the say of if we're going to have a football season altogether. Are you unified? Are you all going to go if everyone's going to go? Or is there a chance that we could see a bifurcated season where some go and some don't?
I think you could. I wouldn't make any predictions yet because I think it's just too soon to know. But if some schools are unable to play and make that decision, I don't think that keeps everybody from playing. So I think everything is still on the table at this point. It's one of the tough things for decision makers is that you're used to making decisions and moving on. And in this case, it's really premature to make the decisions that ultimately will need to be made. And that's why the sharing of information is so critical. And we have to keep the various scenarios that could happen on the table going forward. So, you know, when we can start narrowing those scenarios, it will be very helpful to all of us. And we're getting there, and we will get there. And some progress is being made with decisions about opening campuses in the fall. Because I think it starts with that. We are intercollegiate athletics. Our athletes are students. And so what happens institutionally needs to happen first, and then we follow, in a sense, hopefully with the right protocols and protection for our student athletes, fans, everybody else that will be involved when we start playing again. And that day will come. We just hope it's at the normal time.
Sounded like you said there could be a scenario where some conferences do play, some don't. How about within your league? What if some schools, Clemson or let's say North Carolina, can by state, but you go to the north and Boston College in Massachusetts or Syracuse in New York or Notre Dame in Indiana when it's the other sports, not football related, if they have other restrictions that say right now we can't go, what do you do as a league in terms of your fall sports if some can and some can't?
Well, I think it's likely that if most can play, we haven't made this decision yet, Mike, so I'm giving you mm-hmm. a personal opinion at this point, but I would sure. think that if half or more of our schools can play and want to play, that we would make every effort to do that. You hope you're not in that situation within your league. You hope that all are on the same page. But the way all of this has worked, and we're in 10 different states, so we could have states that prohibit competition, for instance, and mm-hmm. others that do. And every league is in the same boat in regard to that. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. But right now, my best read on our league is that people are generally very unified in their approach to this. But again, a lot can happen over the next few months. And so we'll see how that plays out. But we want to be unified. I hope we can be unified when the time comes.
What's the latest on fans and any guidance on if it'll be completely empty or maybe some fans in the stands, given that we are months away from having a final answer on this?
You know, it's hard. Again, we're planning for each of those scenarios. No fans, mm-hmm. partial fans, you know, even full stadiums. I'm not predicting a full stadium. You know, we just have to go into this in a way that that makes sense and is safe, or as safe as it can be in today's world, for not only the student athletes that are competing and all of those around them on a daily basis and during competition, but also those who may come into the stadium. And Mike, I think one of the things that can help intercollegiate athletics is that during the course of the summer before we play, I think we'll learn some things from the professional leagues who will start playing before we do. And that can be fortuitous for intercollegiate athletics because, it's hard to know what's going to work and work well and what's not going to work so well. And consequently, we'll have our eye very closely on what goes on in professional sports before we are up and hopefully playing in the fall. And even though our game is different, I'm not comparing college football, for instance, to the NFL or any of our other sports, but we can learn a great deal from them. We're a part of an academic community. And we're part of students and faculty and college towns and communities that very much are there because of some of the tremendous universities that we have, and the two play off of each other. So it's a little different, not a little different. It's a great deal different, really, than having 30 some teams across the country, such as a pro league does. So, but there are a lot of similarities as well.
Last question. I could ask you so much more about this topic, but I think we need to address it. Could there be a significant shift in the structure of intercollegiate athletics based on the financial impact that COVID-19 is going to have, not just on the gate, not just on campuses, but on the entirety of these academic institutions that are going to see a very different world as we go to 2021 and beyond?
Could be, yes. We'll have to wait and see on that. Intercollegiate athletics and higher education both are tremendously resilient and have been over the years, and I think will be going forward. But anytime there's a new normal, so to speak, and I think there will be a new normal to some extent, just as there was after 9/11, for instance. The way things are done traveling are very different today than they were before 9/11. And I suspect there'll be certainly some things that are quite different in the sports world and throughout society after this pandemic. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of resiliency in intercollegiate athletics and our various conferences and our universities, as I said, but there'll be different ways of doing things. How far-reaching that will be in terms of how intercollegiate athletics are played and conducted, we'll just have to wait and see.
And you're in a very unique space because the ACC membership, you've got six schools that are private schools in Wake and Duke and Syracuse and BC and Notre Dame and Miami. So it's a whole different mix that John Swofford has to balance and has been doing as the commissioner of the ACC since 1997. Good to catch up with you, friend. It's been too long. Best to you and your family. And we hope we see sports, not just football, but all the fall ACC sports once we get to late August and September. Thanks for your time, John.
Thank you, Mike. Great to be with you.
Same here. Lunch Talk Live continues. More after this.
What's up, Noble?
Define success.
How do you define success?
How do you define success? Wow, there's a lot of ways to define success. First and foremost is are you a good person? Okay, that's one of the things that I think is really important, is that you're the right type of person, that you do carry yourself the right way first and foremost. I really do. I believe that nice guys do finish first. People that do things the right way give themselves an opportunity to be successful.
It's a little social media example of how Ron Rivera has been trying to meet the fans in his new home as the new head coach of the Washington Redskins after 9 successful years, including taking the Panthers to the Super Bowl, Super Bowl winner as a player as well. He joins us now as he is mobile around the D.C. area with the head coach, your wife Stephanie, at the wheel, I imagine, Coach.
Yeah, she is. Stephanie's driving us around. We had to go and see a notary. We sold our home in Carolina, and we had to get the paperwork done today. So we're headed back home now after having to practice social distancing, try to do things the right way.
Well, that's awesome that you've taken the time to join us. Hey, I heard that in your opening Zoom meeting, as you try to meet your players, Tress Way, your punter, said he was ready to tackle his 2-year-old son. Now, Tress has 6 tackles in his 4 years in the league, so he's legit. It's not like a kicker talk. This guy actually looks for physical contact. But what was so good about your message to the players in a virtual hello, this is who we're going to be?
Well, I really didn't want to do it virtually. I mean, first time I wanted to talk to my team, I wanted to do it in person. You know, in 2011, we went through something similar in terms of the lockout, and I didn't speak to my team until the very first day of training camp. So I was kind of hoping to do it in person, but as things were going on, and talking with a couple of the coaches, they just felt now's a good time for a message. And I thought, let's do it. So really, all I really spelled out was what was expected, more so than anything else, what we expect from them. But more importantly, I also told them what they can expect from us. And I think that the players got to understand, first and foremost, that we're all in this together and that we all share responsibility.
It's been a while since that group has had success. So as you jump in, how can you build that confidence before you win a game, before you get on the field together?
I think first and foremost, you have to make sure everybody understands what the vision is, what the goal is. And really, I try to make sure we spell that out too, as well as that we want to try and develop a sustainable winning culture. I mean, there's a lot of great examples in the league right now, of people that have done that and been very successful. You know, Andy Reid, Coach Belichick, those guys come to mind immediately because they've done it for so long and they've just been able to sustain success that long. We'd love to be able to mimic that here in Washington.
There's a player who I want to ask you about. I really don't want to get into how much can he play, all that stuff. But Alex Smith, our friend Stefania Bell did an amazing show on Alex's comeback from his horrific leg injury. Have you been able to talk to Alex at all about his mindset and his approach to continuing to want to be a part of football?
We have, and we've had some great conversations on up until the lockout occurred. And so we haven't been able to get back to the facility and sit down with him again since. But, I've just, in getting to know who he is, I don't doubt him. But again, the one thing that he and I talked about more so than anything else is that, he's got to be able to protect himself out on the football field before anything can happen, before we can allow him back on the field. But he's doing a great job. He's working hard. He's carrying himself the right way. He's doing things the way he's supposed to. And we'll see. You just never know. And, we'll find out hopefully sometime in late August.
It's exciting to see him just be able to get back out and be on the football field in small steps. We all have great admiration for Alex and what he's overcome. We wish him the best. Stephen Ross, the owner of the Miami Dolphins, was on Squawk Box on CNBC this morning, and his quote was that there will definitely be a football season. There's more encouragement than there was a month or 6 weeks ago. What are you feeling from your seat there in Washington?
Pretty much that. I mean, again, it's way too early, I think, for anybody really predict what's going to happen. But if things continue to trend in the right way, we continue to develop and learn more and more about the situation, circumstances, understand what's expected of us in terms of how we have to act and behave, I think, we can hopefully get ourselves back into that position. And who knows? Hopefully, within time, there'll be enough testing. Who knows when the vaccine will be found. But for the most part, we've got to go ahead and continue to practice the social distancing, following the rules from the CDC and just do the things the right way.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports just put up a story about 20 minutes ago, said that head coaches may be returning to the building as soon as a week, and then maybe OTAs could happen in person with players towards late June. What would it mean if you are able, and we don't know if it's certain, if you're able to get your players for one session of OTAs, what kind of a difference could that make?
Well, I think it make a great difference because, again, we can see exactly where we are, what we have, and we can also most certainly explain to the players and get the players to understand exactly what we're trying to do before we start training camp. That would be very beneficial to the new coaching staffs.
Chase Young, your pick, obviously, at the number two spot in the draft. Tremendous film reel from his Ohio State days. Some game-changing plays, especially early in their season last year. As you watched him, given who you have there in Washington, what did you see that makes you think this could be part of a difference-making defensive front as you guys start this new era in Washington?
Well, I think a big part of it is just really you look at one thing, and to me that's, you know, you build your team, I think, from up front, offensive line, defensive line. I think those are probably the two most important things. And really felt strong about the opportunity to improve our football team that way. You know, we really like who he is as a young man. Got a chance to spend some time with him prior to the shutdown of everything. So we had a good feel for him as a person. And then obviously his tape was tremendous. And just knowing the kind of impact he's going to have on our defense. You know, guys like that, we've got a couple of them. We've got a couple of quality young defensive players that are coming into their own right about now. And that's one of the pluses, too, is if you look at the young guys that are up front that are playing, we can have a group of guys that can play together for a number of years and really, you know, just say, hey, we don't have to worry about that position for quite some time. We can build the rest of the team now. And that's also one of the things that we looked at when we were making our decision, you know, going forward and saying, hey, we fix the defensive line now. Add that last piece to the puzzle with the D line. We can go forward and we can work on this position. We can work on that position. So, you know, the impact of choosing Chase as our number one pick, I think really just is very helpful.
Ron, you've been a respected voice in the league for some time here. I'm curious your perspective on some of the changes made in the Rooney Rule. There were others discussed, but some that were made, including not being able to block assistance from those interviews as much as has happened in the past.
You know, I think that's great. I mean, I've lost a number of assistants to jobs where they've got the opportunity to move up. And it's hard because, you know, I was in that position. I was very fortunate. I went and talked with Andy Reid. I asked Coach if that ever came up, you know, would he let me go? Coach was so straightforward. Absolutely, Ron, I don't want to hold anybody back. And it was tremendous that he gave me that chance. So I've always remembered that. And so when I've talked with my coaches, I've always wanted to try and give them the opportunity to move forward. And I'm glad to see that. I really am because, you know, the only way guys get chances to go up is if they can take, you know, the opportunity, the next opportunity, instead of having to wait. So this, I think, is a really good thing.
And sometimes even if they don't get the job, that interview that they get may set them up for that next interview that they can knock out of the park and find that job. Thursday, in a couple of days, the owners are going to meet virtually. Rules changes are being discussed. Can I ask about the one that would replace the onside kick with 4th and 15 from your own 25-yard line? What do you think of that rule change?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I really do, because it's not necessarily replacing the onside kick. If you want an onside kick, you can onside kick. Now, if you're feeling pretty good about, you know, the way your quarterback's been playing, or you feel, hey, this might give us a better opportunity, 4th and 15 is pretty promising. Mm-hmm. So, again, it's another thing that's going to put another decision-making topic on the head coach's plate. It's going to add, I think, a little bit of intrigue. It really is. So, you know, and again, it's not there to replace the onside kick. I think it's to give the team another option.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The Sky Judge question as well is out there for the teams to discuss and the ownership to vote on here on Thursday. Thank you to Stephanie for driving. Stay safe on the road. We look forward to catching up with you around Washington. Ron Rivera, thank you so much, Coach. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Always good to talk, man. Be safe.
Yeah, you too. Ron Rivera, head coach of the Washington Redskins, joining us on the road after an appointment with the notary. Real estate matters going on. One of the most touching stories of the return to sports is Chase Briscoe. He's going to join us when we come right back.
I feel like we haven't realized our full potential yet, and we need moments like this to get it. Ran really strong at Phoenix, really strong at Darlington, and then to win this one, it's a good feeling. Hopefully we can put a few more wins under our belts before the playoffs start, and sure would like to get one at my home track in Michigan, and just makes you think about all the tracks you haven't checked off when you check off a big race like the Coke 600.
race was long over the weekend, but our friend Brad Keselowski got the win. So congratulations to Brad, as Darlington saw a very eventful and at times emotional week, as you had NASCAR races and Xfinity races. And the Xfinity race earlier in the week was won by Chase Briscoe, who joins us now. First things first, I want to start, Chase, with what is most significant in terms of the immediacy of it only. You were in a pretty good bang-up at the end of last night's Xfinity race. How are you feeling this morning?
Yeah, we had a guy right in front of me blow a motor, and so oil was all over the racetrack. And when that happens, it's like hitting ice. So I went straight into the wall, and definitely a lot harder hit than I was expecting. That'll obviously welcome me back to racing. That's the highs and lows of what happens in our sport, and, you know, that's part of it. So try again on Saturday at Bristol.
Yeah, it was weird. I got back home and I was watching the race last night. And I saw you moving up the pylon. I'm like, good. Briscoe's going to win back-to-back Xfinity races, and he's going to be on with us. This will be great. And then a tire got loose in your pit stall, but you kept the guys calm on the radio. You came back a little bit, then were involved in that incident, then another one a bit later on. It's kind of the ultimate example of the emotions of just the racing part, where you win earlier in the week, and then last night it was just, things kept happening to you when it mattered most in that final stage.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's just how racing, any sport can be. You know, one week you can have everything go your way, and the next week nothing go your way. And that was kind of how our Charlotte race was last night. You know, we were really good early in the race, was, you know, battling for the lead. And then the final stage started, and we had an uncontrolled tire penalty. So I have to go to the back, and then from dead last drive back to fifth, and then have a speeding penalty. And then the guy blows the motor in front of us, and we blow another tire. So it was just one thing after another. But we were able to salvage a 20th out of it, which obviously we had a lot better race car than that. But, you know, we could have easily ran 35th with all the situations that we were dealing with. So put that one behind us and move on to Bristol, like I was saying earlier, which should be a really good track for us.
That's next for the Xfinity Series. Last Thursday, you beat Kyle Busch, who won yesterday, by the way. Another Xfinity win. He's closing in on 100 there. But last Thursday, you beat him. But that wasn't even the story. It was such an emotional time. You and your wife, Marissa, had found out a couple days before that you lost your unborn child. What was it like getting behind the wheel last Thursday, dealing with those emotions just 48 hours removed?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, we were supposed to race on Tuesday, and that afternoon is when we had found out. You know, I think that was the hardest thing for me, is I was in Darlington already, and she was at home, and, you know, I wasn't able to comfort her. I was stuck in Darlington, and we had the rain, so I got to go home and then go back Thursday. And even leaving her on Thursday was a challenge. I knew that, you know, racing, I was always going to get back in the race car. It wasn't a matter of I was going to sit out or not. But I didn't know really where my head was going to be or how my emotions were going to be. And honestly, they were a lot worse than I anticipated. You know, the last 50 laps, I'd taken the lead around 50 or 60 to go, and my head was just all over the place. I knew my wife was at home watching. I knew that she was with her family. I knew my family was watching. I just felt all those emotions riding on my shoulders, and it was definitely tough. Like I said, just mentally, I was not there at all, obviously emotionally either. But then to get the win and to beat a guy like Kyle Busch, you know, you couldn't ask for a better story. And you know, it just all made sense. You know, me and my wife had talked about, we knew we were going to go public with it at some point. We didn't know when, and we decided to do it that very next day on Wednesday. And, you know, it's been very humbling and amazing, you know, how many people have gone through the same thing we have, and just trying to be that light for them and show that, you know, because of our faith, we can still get through this. And then, you know, to see the lowest of the lows on Tuesday and then one of the highest of the highs on Thursday, hopefully it gave, you know, at least one couple inspiration. You know, that's kind of how we're trying to look at this thing is, you know, maybe this is our purpose in life, and that's what God is trying to use as our testimony, so that's what we're trying to do.
Chase, I can't imagine the emotions of trying to do your job, that job where it requires your full attention, and you're racing hard against one of the best, and have all those other thoughts in your head. How on this planet did you keep it all together and win this race?
Well, like I was saying, I truly feel like God was driving the race car. I mean, those last 8 or 9 laps specifically, I don't really even remember. And the stuff that happened in those last even 2 laps, you know, in turns 1 and 2, me and Kyle go in side by side, and I got in the wall, in any other situation, you get in the wall in our cars and it slows you down. And it seemed like I hit the wall in gain speed almost. So, you know, like I was saying, with 50 to go, I was in tears driving the race car, was not even thinking about what was going on. There were so many times I thought I would hit the wall and then my car would just stop. It was like I'd get an inch from the wall and it would just catch me and I wouldn't hit it. So there were just so many things that went right in that race between cautions coming at the right time, our pit stops, and just so many things. So it was definitely meant to be that day, and obviously it wasn't meant to be last night, but that's okay. There's always more races, and, you know, it was definitely special, though, to win Thursday and to do it, like you said, beating Kyle Busch. He's one of the best of all time, so made it that much sweeter.
We saw the tears there at Darlington. I can only imagine what it was like when you got back home.
Yeah, it was, you know, inside the race car after I took the checkered, I mean, I was bawling my eyes out. My wife will tell you that I'm not the most emotional guy. I really hold my emotions in and don't really show them. So I felt like, you know, right after I won, that was finally my time to just let everything, you know, I'd been holding so much in to that moment. And then finally to just be able to let them go. And then in victory lane, obviously, there was still some tears rolling. But, yeah, getting home was, you know, really good for both of us. I think it kind of really lifted both of our spirits up. You know, a win, yeah, it's great to win. But, you know, we just needed something in our life to kind of turn things around. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, it made it feel like our purpose in life was kind of revealed and the steps that we're going to take to get through this. So, you know, it's like I said earlier, it's been literally incredible the amount of people that have reached out to us and, you know, said they were going through the same things. And hopefully, like I said, we can just be helping. If we can just help one couple, it's been all worth it.
Well, we saw the pink wings that you had on the car for the race last night. I'm sure that'll continue. And for those who didn't know Chase Briscoe as well or have watched you race before, you built a whole bunch of fans here with your story, with what you shared, to kind of remind us that sports can just get us caught up in people we don't know and make us start yelling at the TV for people. So our prayers to you, Marissa. We wish you good thoughts in the future here, and stay safe. Thank you for sharing your story in a couple minutes with us, Chase. Go get them.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Chase Briscoe, he and his wife, Marissa, we so appreciate them sharing their story and keep them in our thoughts as we go forward. When we come back, our friend Liam McHugh will join us. We'll talk about where hockey is on its road to return right after this.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Our Line Starts. I feel like my only two colleagues who are not rumored to be taking over the front office of a major hockey club these days. I guess that's why you could join me. Thanks, guys. I think the two guys who apparently aren't busy.
That rumor will never happen. I can guarantee you that, Liam.
Nobody wants us.
Moose and I love our jobs here.
And you two need to get some wireless headsets eventually.
No, keep that's it real right here. This is how you do it right here.
Yeah, that's how you do it. That's what the kids mean when they say keeping it real.
It's Our Line Starts, our hockey crew, Liam McHugh leading the way with the guys. It's good to see that Keith Jones actually has improved his internet quality because it was AOL dial-up level earlier in the pandemic.
Yeah,
Liam, how are you holding up with your little kids there at home? Yeah, exactly. How are you holding up, bud?
I'm doing okay. These are long days. We're up early. I've upgraded. Last time I saw you, I was in the attic. I am now down in the living room.
Yes.
But that's only because I've been moved, I can tell you. This is me back in the attic.
Oh.
That attic now contains a drum kit that was given to us by a neighbor.
Oh.
So at 6 o'clock this morning, I was awoken to the sweet sounds of a snare drum. So I'm no longer up there. That's the drum room. I'm back down here.
Which gives you the option to re-gift that drum set at any point that you need to. You don't have to tell people. You just say, hey, we got it as a gift from a friend. We want to enlighten somebody else's world. So you can just kind of move it one house down if so needed. So it sounded like hockey is putting the pieces in place to think about a more concrete schedule of return. The NHL sent out a release a short time ago. There's going to be a 4:30 announcement. We're going to have it for you on NBCSN regarding a return to play here for the National Hockey League. So, Liam, at least the direction is pointed, like the other sports, for hockey to get back to some competition.
Yeah, I mean, it's a positive step. I mean, that's what you want. This is going to be a long process, but it's a positive step forward that it would appear that at least part of this announcement is going to go into the idea that there will be a 24-team playoff, and that's the agreement, and that is the next step. And of course, you know, it was just a few days ago they talked about phase two. Phase one was the quarantine phase. Now phase two is getting some players back into the facility and doing it in small groups. But I think as a sports fan, you want to get excited about things. You want things to get going. This is one of those steps where this idea of actual games taking place, what is the field, who's going to play against each other, and now it looks like we will have that announcement potentially later today, and we'll see this expanded playoff format in the NHL.
Yeah, we had Mark Cuban on earlier talking about basketball and Orlando. Hockey's talking about a couple of centralized sites as well. We just had Ron Rivera on talking about football, maybe OTAs coming, head coaches might be going back in the building. I think, Liam, for all of us, we're kind of excited about it, but at the same point, you almost feel like there's going to be a stop sign. Something's going to happen somewhere, a positive test of some sort, which I guess is going to be the threshold that we'll have to test incrementally here to see how fast and how successfully we can get back to competition.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you go into the details and you realize how, you know, nuanced everything is, it's a 22-page dossier about teams just getting six players on the ice without contact. What is that going to look like in the next phase for training camp? What is that going to look like in the phase after that, which is eventually playing games? It's complicated. So in many ways, while there was a negotiation and 29 teams agreed to the 24-team playoff, this idea that that's the biggest hurdle is just not true. The next round of negotiations, the hub cities, how we're going to do this safely, the testing protocols to keep everyone safe throughout. And to your point, the idea that if one person or just a few people test positive, how they can keep this going. Because that's the big thing. They don't want one or two or a small amount of tests to derail what they've already started.
We have 15 seconds left. Who's been your favorite visitor as we've gone through the vault and turned back the clock to old hockey days?
Oh, well, listen, earlier today I spoke to Jerry Rice, and I can tell you that coming up in the video, a lot of people consider him the greatest of all time. He has the tattoo to prove it, and he is willing to show it, so you will be able to see that.
So beyond the hockey vault, it's the other vaults. I saw the great college football content on Friday night last week, so Jerry Rice part of it as well. All right, Liam, thanks, bud. Keep your sanity. Move those drums down the street. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, I'm trying. Thanks, Mike.
It's Tuesday. We do that to confirm it for Liam. All right, so I guess we'll see you at 4:30 Eastern special on the return for the National Hockey League and the plans there. Rich Eisen Show starts now. See you then.